This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. It's Thursday, and if you are a KCRW listener, lover, and hopefully supporter, you know what that means. It's time for this week's film reviews. Joining us today is Whitney Seibold, contributor to Slash Film and co-host of the podcast Critically Acclaimed, and Katie Walsh reviews films for the Tribune News Service, the LA Times, and The Wrap. Welcome, both of you.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. All right, let's start with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. This takes place over a year after the events of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This time, Spider-Man Miles is called upon to save spider people from someone or something called the Spot.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man. And things are going great.
Oh, yeah. You were supposed to be here at 5.
All right, whatever.
Whatever?
Wow.
Whatever?
Okay, Whitney, there is definitely a lot of anticipation for this movie because, well, everyone seemed to love the first one. What did you think?
Well, Into the Spider-Verse was an incredible film. It was just so striking and stylish. It's like the filmmakers remembered that animation was kind of this limitless medium. So they just threw as many weird colors and shapes and ideas at the audience as they could. And with this new film, Across the Spider-Verse, they've just decided to up the visual game. So it is just bigger and longer. There are more spider people from more alternate universes. That's the premise of these movies, is the multiverse is broken open and spider people, men, women, and animals from all across the multiverse can now meet and interact. The antagonist is a villain called The Spot, but the other antagonist is a Spider-Man from the year 2099 who wishes to make sure spider people continue to be created. And the big moral quandary is, if you're going to create a spider person, doesn't that mean an Uncle Ben has to die for each one? So now there's this raft of dead Uncle Bens across the multiverse that Miles Morales begins to question whether or not that's necessary. A lot of the sort of moral questions and story beats are kind of intriguing, and you're going to be so unbelievably dazzled by some of these visuals. There's a villain in it that looks like he came out of a Leonardo da Vinci sketchbook, for instance. There's a spider punk character played by Daniel Kaluuya, and he constantly looks like he's ripped off of like a punk rock flyer. He's kind of rumpled and strange looking. It does become a little bit much after a while. Visually, it's wonderful, but in terms of story and twists, it begins to pile on after a while. The movie is over 2 hours in length, which is unusual for an animated feature. This is actually only one half of a two-part mega sequel, so it's difficult for me to criticize it properly because I feel like it's not finished. They introduced all of these interesting ideas, and they didn't really follow through yet. So this isn't a matter of a cliffhanger. They didn't finish up story things. It feels like they didn't even complete the ideas. They didn't complete anything within this chapter. So now we're going to have to wait until, I believe, the next chapter comes out in March to figure out what this film was all about.
Oh my gosh. So another 2 hours, but maybe worth it. Katie, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a 2 hour and 20 minute movie, and it feels like a blur of color and light. I couldn't believe that it was over as quickly as it was. It just goes by in such a flash. It's an incredibly immersive visual experience. I do recommend sitting very close to the screen, although I'm sure it's amazing if you sit farther back too. I was just very close, and I just felt like I fell into this pool of incredible artwork and character. I felt like there was sort of references to abstract expressionism and, you know, dance and all of these different art forms that we've, you know, seen over the years. But you still are able to hold on to these characters, specifically Miles Morales, who is sort of deciding, is he going to write his own story or is he going to, you know, be adherent to the text, the canon, if you will. But I also love that this story also really focuses a lot on his friend Gwen, who plays Ghost Spider and is voiced by Hailee Steinfeld. And she gets a whole storyline as well, too. So the fact that they are able to manage so many characters and themes and the artistry of it all is really impressive. I just love these movies.
Do you recommend going in an altered state, given all the visual stimulation? Or maybe the opposite?
The movie, you know, does it for you, I'd say.
I would be a little overwhelmed, I think, if I was not fully with all of my senses and faculties.
Okay. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is in wide release today. Next, we have past lives in this one. Two childhood friends are torn apart when one of the families emigrates from South Korea to Canada. They are reunited as adults.
What a good story this is. Childhood sweethearts who reconnect 20 years later and realize they were meant for each other. In the story, I would be the evil white American husband standing in the way of destiny.
Shut up.
All right, Katie, we interviewed the director of this yesterday, Celine Song, and talked a lot about it. So if anyone missed that, they can go back and listen to that. But what did you think of this movie? And give everyone a quick summary of the plot.
Yeah, this is the directorial debut of Celine Song. It's based, I believe, on an incident from her own life about a young girl who at the age of 12 immigrates from Korea to Canada with her family and leaves behind a very close friend, a young boy who, you know, they sort of have crush on each other. And they reconnect as sort of in their early 20s and have this sort of obsessive friendship via Skype. And then that kind of falls away. And then they reconnect again when they're in their mid-30s. And she at this point is married and he comes to visit New York where she's living. And it sort of takes place over a couple of days of them kind of exploring, you know, what this connection is. But it's also about fate. I love this film because of the way that Celine Song treats time, and the story is about time. It's about flashes of memory and 12 years and 24 years, but then also 2 minutes. And she's very patient in the way that she treats some of these moments. There's just, she will just show two characters waiting for a car for 2 minutes. And there's so much tension and all of these things that are left unsaid between these characters, but we are willing to sort of sit there in this moment as the clock is ticking. I think that it really ties into the theme of all of these lifetimes and all of these moments of, you know, fate that bring people together and the kind of randomness or fatedness of the world. I also think it's just really beautifully shot. Shabir Kirchner is the DP and they shot on 35 millimeter and it's just incredibly warm, sort of grainy, beautiful film. And you just kind of want to take in certain shots and scenes that kind of, you're like, I don't even know why there's a shot of like a water glass and a lemon, but I love it and I can't stop thinking about it. So it's just a really beautiful, beautifully crafted and excellently acted film. Greta Lee is the lead character here. Taeyo Yoo, it plays her Korean friend Hae-sung, and he's an amazing actor. I think he really kind of brings the mood and sentiment of this film to the fore. And John Magaro plays her husband Arthur, and they're just such a great trio. I just think you rarely see a film that's made with as much patience and care as this film, and I just think it's really special.
I agree. And I think what I really loved about it too is that she doesn't fall into an expected trap when it comes to a trio and romantic connections and who's going to get together with whom and etc. I think that there's it's an interesting complexity that isn't often explored in these kinds of movies. So
yes,
I loved it as well.
Great. Two thumbs up.
Four thumbs up. Four. Past Lives in theaters beginning today. Next up, we have a supernatural horror film. It's called The Boogeyman. It's based on a 1973 short story of the same name by Stephen King about a high school student struggling with her mother's death.
So this light is going to be completely solid like it is right now. Then gradually, it's going to start flashing until it's totally dark. So you can see that there's nothing to be afraid of. Okay.
All right. So, Whitney, you saw this one. Sophie Thatcher plays the high school student, Sadie Harper. And what did you think of this one?
It doesn't do anything new, The Boogeyman. It is based on a story that was written in the 70s. Maybe that's why it has a bit of an old-fashioned quality to it. But more than anything, it just does a really predictable story relatively well. The filmmaker, his name is Rob Savage, previously did a movie called Host from a couple of years ago, and that was a haunting movie that was set entirely on a Zoom call and how the ghost was moving from caller to caller as they were on this this computer screen. And it was released right during the height of the pandemic when everyone was locked in. That one was really novel. That one was really clever. I wish he had brought some of that cleverness to something like The Boogeyman, which feels like his Hollywood experiment. This is him doing something completely pat, completely mainstream, well enough, but not terribly interesting.
All right, The Boogeyman in theaters beginning today. Last up, we have a sports drama called Shooting Stars about basketball star LeBron James, based on the book by LeBron and Buzz Bissinger, who was the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Friday Night Lights. Here's a bit from the trailer.
See you a second, Coach.
You on the team here?
Nah, but I could be if you're lucky.
Me and my boys, we've been balling with each other since we was like 10. Call ourselves the Fab Four.
Let's go then! Get up!
Can win you a state championship, guaranteed.
All right, Katie, the stars Marquise Mookie Cook as LeBron. It's his debut as an actor, but he is a basketball player at the University of Oregon. How is he?
He should stick to his day job.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry to say. So this is about LeBron James and his four best friends in high school. There was a documentary in 2008 called More Than a Game, which is about this same story. A very well-received documentary. So they have since basically made this documentary, but they're also adapting the book into this high school sports very sort of generic, the team wins the game kind of story. I don't think this movie needed to be made at all, and it is not very good. I will say that Wood Harris, who we know from The Wire as Avon Barksdale, plays Drew Joyce, who's the coach, the beloved coach of LeBron James, and Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things plays his son, Little Drew, who's one of LeBron's friends. And there's some tension there because he really wants to be a basketball star. And it just is so obvious that LeBron is the star here and his friends are the supporting characters. But those guys are great. Caleb and Wood Harris are great. But the rest of the cast is just like not picking up the slack. And I also think that the direction by Chris Robinson is just not all that interesting either. I think he really over relies on needle drops. I just think there are a few needle drops that and songs that you can use that are sort of like cheat codes. I almost wanted to be like, foul, you can't use that song. And he lets the whole song play. I was like kind of shocked. But if you put Outkast over a basketball game, it's going to be exciting. I just like it
seems
it's
like a
not
cheat
even
trick,
a question. Though. Yeah. So and he does some interesting things with drones and stuff in the basketball games, but it didn't really feel like there was an organizing principle to how he was shooting the basketball games. He was kind of just doing some cool shots, but it wasn't like there was a thesis behind why he was doing any of what he was doing. It's just very generic and not that compelling. I'm so sorry to say.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, should we skip that and watch the NBA Finals, Whitney?
Yes.
And Katie? Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
Watching an actual basketball game is more dramatic than this movie. I'm not really sure what the arc or the story or the thrust or even the point was. It seems that LeBron James was once a teenager, and he played a lot of basketball when he was a teenager, and he had a good time with his friends.
How did that happen? That's kind of the
whole point of the movie. There's a scene early in the film where they go to basketball training, they come home, and they play more basketball at home, and then they play video games, and they're basketball video games. That's all they have in their lives is basketball, and they have a good time doing it, and they like doing it as friends. And I guess if you just sort of want to hang out with a teenage LeBron James, that's the reason of this movie. It's a hangout kind of a movie, but it's not warm or comforting or fun because it does have some of these really cliched, really boring sort of sport movie moments that you've seen done better in thousands of other sports movies. I'm not really sure why we need this.
Oh my God. First he loses to the Nuggets and now this. 0-2 LeBron.
This year, we've had two films about the stars of the two Space Jam movies, because Michael Jordan had Air.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how you feel about Air, but...
I enjoyed Air, but that's a subject for another day.
It certainly is. Okay, we'll throw down on that one. All right. Shooting Stars streaming, if you want, or again, you can watch the NBA Finals beginning tomorrow on Peacock. And that is it for this week. Whitney Seibold, contributor to Slash Film and co-host of the podcast Critically Acclaimed. Katie Walsh reviews films for the Tribune News Service, the LA Times, and The Wrap. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You are listening to KCRW. During our first day of our Save Our Summer emergency fundraiser, I'm joined now by Steve Chiotakis for a little help in trying to get you to go online or go to the phone to up your membership or become a new member or renew your membership, whatever it is, 800-600-5279 or kcrw.com/join. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Madeline. Just imagine you and I are both on a secluded beach, right? And we're on this island. And
Hopefully it's sunny because it's not really sunny right now.
Well, I mean, it's not. No, June gloom, but I mean, really. So we've got the rocks and we've got SOS, and we're waving at you. You're up in the airplane, and we're waving at you. Come help us. We're trying to make sure that the radio station stays strong and healthy going forward, and we call it our Save Our Summer campaign because this is one way to do it. Just a few days out of the summer, we're asking for your support to be a part of this radio station, active participant in the radio station to keep us strong and healthy going forward, because things, as you know, Madeline Brand, are very expensive these days.
They certainly are. Inflation is a real thing, and also so are media layoffs and media bankruptcies. That's also a real thing that's happening everywhere. So let us not have that befall us. And it's not going to, but that's because we have great listeners like you supporting us. KCRW.com/join. Thank you, Steve.
All right.
Coming up, Evan Kleiman is here with a recipe for summer. That is next on Press Play.